Welcome to Countdown to Kickoff here on WAER.
Across the 10 to the 5, still on his feet, and into the end zone. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle straightaway free, sinks it. Tyus Battle is 5 for 5. The freshman is on fire.
Pass in front to Evans. Oh, what a shot and a goal. Behind the back by Jordan Evans.
Welcome back to the double overtime here on WAER.
The greatest stories from America's greatest college sports station. It's time for the best of WAER Sports Podcast.
Many describe the Syracuse men's basketball team to feel like family. It's even easier when you're actually family. WAER's Noah Eagle tells us how a certain group of brothers have and continue to leave their legacy on the program.
Changed my life, and I got to give credit to Mike Hopkins, who, when I was a high school kid, just coming on a college tour and knocking on his door without him knowing me, he sat down with me for a half hour and told me about the program and, you know, what it means to this city and to this fan base. And
in the late 2000s, a gregarious high schooler named Kevin Belby took a chance and had a feeling it would lead to something special.
Kind of interviewed me and he said, all right, he's like, I like you. So he's like, now you got to get in. And if you get in, you got the job. So I got in, and then from the first day of my freshman year to the day I graduated, I was doing something basketball related.
From there, the Belby family name has had ties with the Syracuse men's basketball program for the better part of a decade. Kevin went on to do wonderful things, becoming head manager by his senior year. His younger brother, Sean.
Pass stolen by Sean Belby. The lefty layup off the glass is good. And the walk-ons put up 6 points to punctuate a big Syracuse win.
A current walk-on for the team. For Kevin, it makes sense that they're so heavily involved with SU basketball.
The first day I got on campus, I realized that Syracuse basketball is much more than a program to this city, to this campus, to this community. So I was, you know, it sounds cliche, but I was honored and lucky to just be a very small part of it for the time I was here.
And some might say those were the glory days. Kevin was on campus as a manager from 2009 to 2013, a period when SU accumulated some of the best seasons in program history, as well as some incredibly memorable moments.
Spin move in a lane and a layup with a right-hand nail by Deion Waiters.
Revenge is a dish best served cold, and it tastes like orange for the Hoyas. Syracuse bids farewell to Georgetown with a 58-55 win.
You know, we beat Louisville at Louisville. They were the number one team in the country. We played on an aircraft carrier out in San Diego against San Diego State, which was really cool. And it was the last year of the Big East, too. So, you know, we made it to the Big East Championship in the tournament, lost to Louisville in overtime.
In his 4 years, SU was ranked the top team in the country twice, and at one point was ranked third or higher in all four of his seasons with the program. A lot of that had to do with the addition of a now university staple.
I don't think it's a coincidence, my 4 years here, the four winningest in program history. No, it's definitely a coincidence. My freshman year, you know, we started here and the Mello Center was born my first month, and I think that's a big reason why the program had so much success.
And it was all culminated by a miracle run.
10 years to the day from the last time Syracuse went to the Final Four, the Orange is on its way again. Syracuse beats Marquette 55-39 to go to its fifth Final Four in school history.
It's no good. The Orange miracle is complete. Syracuse erases a 16-point deficit and is headed to the Final Four.
Two Final Fours in 4 years. The one common theme, a presence of Belby. First Kevin, then Sean.
I didn't. It was really him, and I think he just fell in love with the program just like I did. But he was in, you know, eighth grade, freshman year of high school, a very impressionable age, and he would come up here and visit me and, you know, come to practice and be sitting in the gorgeous Mello Center and seeing guys flying from the foul line and going to the Carrier Dome and seeing 30,000 people. And, you know, I never pushed him to go to Syracuse. It was just something that he wanted to do.
It was mostly always Syracuse all the way. You know, my senior year of high school, The decision was tough, but, you know, ultimately I had to just follow my heart, and, you know, that led me to Syracuse.
And that decision led him to another stop. As his playing days come to an end, Sean has begun crafting a post-player career after interning with NBA skills coach Drew Hanlon.
Being with Drew these past couple summers has been an incredible experience. It's made me realize that I might follow a similar path, you know, after school, and that I can succeed at that at a high level as well. But I'm real excited. I think that my Syracuse connection, you know, may have helped me get that position with him, and I enjoyed it.
Those close to Sean think it's a no-brainer.
My dad jokes that he's very single-dimensional. He's just all about basketball all the time. So for him to try and find a career like being a skills trainer that involves an orange ball bouncing up and down where he can get paid for it, I think that's a dream to him.
Sean has taken what he's learned and applied it to this year's team, because when it's all said and done, both he and his brother that came before him have the same goal in mind before Sean leaves Central New York.
National championship all the way.
National championship, of course. Hopefully they can make another Final Four run, and once you get there, anything can happen.
The ultimate goal being achieved with Sean on campus will only solidify what's already an impressive family legacy in SU basketball history. Noah Eagle, WAER Sports.
Former Syracuse University football player Tim Green made a big impact on the football field. This past year, he was diagnosed with ALS. So what he's doing now will have a much bigger impact for many years to come. That's fighting back and raising $10 million for continued research. WAER's James Colgan has more.
If anyone is fit to have their life defined by a battle, it's Tim Green. Tim doesn't just beat his opponents. He destroys them.
The one play is when he burst through the backfield, hit the quarterback as the quarterback was handing off the ball to the running back, and basically he tackled two people.
To Tim's old college roommate and teammate Paul Frace, Tim's new motto, "Let's beat this," is actually a pretty old one. It can be traced back to November of 1985 in the Carrier Dome, Syracuse versus Boston College. Green lined up directly across from the center.
Here's the give of the fullback, Black, and Timmy Green tackled two ball players. He tackled two men. Unbelievable.
Evidently, Green tackles obstacles like he tackles football players. By the fistful, several at a time. Whether it's becoming one of eight Syracuse players ever to receive multiple consensus All-American honors, earning a Rhodes Scholarship, spending 8 years in the NFL, or becoming a published New York Times best-selling author, then writing 34 more books on top of that. His classmates like ESPN broadcaster Bill Roth saw firsthand, success was optional for Tim. Optional in that he could choose to do whatever he wanted and he'd still be successful.
I think Tim, as we know, if you read his books or read about his books, incredibly worldly. And I think that Tim could have been successful in anything.
Much like those poor Boston College players, Tim decimates every obstacle in his path. That was until about 5 years ago, when he first noticed a tremor in his hands. After years of tests, doctors confirmed the worst. Tim had ALS, a degenerative disease that slowly eats away at a patient's mobility until there simply isn't any left. ALS is terminal. The response from the community was one Liz Crescenda, executive director of the ALS Association in upstate New York, expected.
Unless you know someone with ALS, people don't understand what it means. He's just done a lot of things. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's kind of like this Renaissance man that people just identify with.
The man with limitless success in his 9 professional and personal lives, suddenly confined to a failing body and a slowly ticking clock. Crescenda says Tim's story is important, but it's not unique.
So it's very humanizing, and I think for our patients, and they also see that, you know, it's the same, it's like a communal experience.
No one would have blamed Tim Green had he decided to trail off into private life as the disease progressed, focused on his family, and received treatment for as long as he had left. But then, Tim did something extraordinary that everyone who knows him says is all too ordinary for Tim Green.
Let's beat this.
Let's beat this.
After a few months of privately telling people of his diagnosis, Tim grew tired of hearing the same response over and over again. People would apologize to him. "I'm sorry," they'd say. Tim decided to come up with a new phrase to dominate his life. "Let's beat this." And with the phrase came a foundation whose name pays homage to that defining moment against Boston College some 35 years ago. Tackle ALS. The goal? $10 million to help fund research into a disease that's got very broken finances.
The funding issue is medical research is incredibly expensive. It takes $2 billion to develop a drug, one drug.
And that $2 billion price tag doesn't even cut to the heart of the issue. ALS is so underfunded, researchers don't even know where to start.
Should we be looking at other environmental factors? Should we be looking at head injuries? Like, where should we be looking? And then once we know where to look, then they can start doing that kind of research.
Tackle ALS is well on its way to reaching its $10 million goal. But that's not really a surprise to Tim's old roommate, Paul Frase. The thing that is surprising to Paul is how enthusiastically his old teammate has led the charge, a stark change from Tim's more reserved college days.
His actions spoke loudly to the point where he didn't have to be the rah-rah leader to try to get everybody motivated.
But Tim's newfound audacity isn't the only change that Paul's noticed.
I'm embracing something as simple as a beautiful cloud formation. I'm stopping to smell the flowers. I relish every hug from my children and every interaction, every smile from my wife.
Walking through the valley in the shadow of death, Tim Green has forgotten fear.
He shared with me what was going on. He said, "Paul, I've never been more alive."
Even as Tim's physical self reduces to embers, an internal flame has roared to life.
He will probably kill me for saying this, but he told me that he wanted to be a better person, a better man, a better husband, a better father.
Those who know Tim are quick to point out, heroes don't care about the result. They only care about the fight.
Tim is going to be a catalyst for research for ALS, and it seems that he's going to take the baton and run hard with it.
You want to remember number 72 in blue running up and down the field against Penn State, and I always will, but there's going to be a new Tim Green to remember.
And maybe they're right. Maybe this fight has already been decided. Maybe Tim Green really is undefeated. James Colgan, WAER Sports.
Thanks for listening to the best of WAER Sports podcast. Find a full broadcast schedule at our website, WAER.org. Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts and Stitcher by searching for WAER Sports.